The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. It is me, myself, and I, and a monologue on this Monday with plenty to get into. Let's start with Palantir. As Bloomberg recently reported, Palantir sees record demand for its new AI tool. Here's what it does. This article was published on the 9th of this month, but despite that seeming like a long time ago, what is reported here is still as relevant as ever. Palantir Technologies Incorporated, the data analysis firm co-founded by Peter Thiel, is seeing, quote, unprecedented, unquote, demand for an artificial intelligence platform that it's due to release this month. Shares were up as much as 21% on Tuesday the 9th on anticipation of its arrival. The name of this technology is AIP, Artificial Intelligence Platform, very original naming. According to the company's website, the platform can be used by militaries to tap the kinds of large language models that power ChatGPT to aid in battlefield intel and decision making. A demo video embedded into the website shows how the platform can display and analyze intel on enemy targets, identify potentially hostile situations, propose battle plans, and send those plans to commanding officers for execution. The video emphasizes that the platform is safe and secure, allowing a client to decide what data the models can see and what they, quote, can and can't do on behalf of humans. Important to point out here is the reference to ChatGPT, which is all the rage right now, and the fact that technology like ChatGPT must be looked at, I contend, as Trojan horse technology. It's rolled out to the masses, to you and to me, as a novel, if controversial, tool to be played with, to be experimented with. It's inserted into education, creates a hubbub there as to whether or not students can or should use this to write papers, etc. It's used by much of alternative media, as I've seen, to ask questions, some which are silly, some which are good questions, and see how this technology responds. Whether or not that's a useful exercise, I don't know. But the point being that this technology, ChatGPT, language learning technology, is inserted into society and allowed to essentially run amok. And there's an acceptance, a mass acceptance that comes along with that. A mass acceptance by society. Meanwhile, as that acceptance is building, there are hideous entities like Palantir putting language learning technology called artificial intelligence, wrongly called, I would say. I think machine learning is more appropriate, but language learning technology to use in a military capacity, and as we'll get to in this article, to use in a business capacity. But that's the Trojan horse aspect of what we're talking about here in terms of this technology. It's not really for our productivity or our entertainment. It's to distract us with its novelty, distract us with the seemingly infinite ways it can sidetrack us while building acceptance, while it's being built by entities like Palantir to be weaponized. And if you think that this technology will not eventually be weaponized against us, well, I'd advise you to think again. It's framed in this Bloomberg article as technology that's only going to be weaponized on a conventional war, if you will, battlefield. But as we've seen in the past with platforms like Facebook, Twitter, these technologies are eventually used against us for surveillance, for data mining, censorship, on and on. And no doubt that is how this technology, this language learning technology, is going to boomerang back to us. And I think what we're seeing in this Bloomberg article is a warning of that. I don't think that Bloomberg is trying to warn us. I don't think Bloomberg, being an outlet of the globalist class, cares about us one iota. But if we read between the lines here, it's a warning to us about this technology. I'm not telling anybody to engage or not engage with it, but I will say, whatever your choice is, make it a mindful choice. I choose not to engage with this technology. I don't want to open that door. I don't want to go through that door. And I don't think this technology is necessary for the betterment of our lives, for the betterment of humanity. But that's my choice. The proverbial genie is out of the proverbial bottle, and there's no going back. But it behooves us to be mindful of how this technology will be used against us. Even just the fact that this technology will be used against us. Continuing with this Bloomberg piece, quote, if you wield these technologies correctly, safely, and securely, unquote, Palantir Chief Executive Officer Alex Karp said during Monday's call, Monday, May 8th. Quote, you have a weapon that will allow you to win, that will scare your competitors and adversaries, unquote. Karp described the boom in large language models as a revolution, quote, that will raise ships and sink ships, unquote. Demand for AIP is like, quote, nothing I've ever seen in 20 years of being involved in Palantir, unquote, he said. Quote, we are reorganizing our efforts to aggressively to capitalize, unquote. Very blunt. And I don't think we have to read between the lines much there to really understand what he's getting at. beneath that paragraph in the article, there is an interesting graphic of individuals, part of a Bloomberg podcast, I believe, or some sort of Bloomberg media program. Behind them is an almost cartoonish purple background, and there are two missiles, a fighter jet, and a drone, cartoon versions of them flying above their heads. So we have this merging in this graphic. It's important to look at these graphics and think about why they're used and why they're designed the way they are. We have here a merging of real people, real photographs of real people, and synthetic creations, graphics, cartoon-like graphics. And to me, that speaks to the singularity, the convergence to transhumanism, to the merging of the digital and the biological. Perhaps I'm reading too much into it, but again, I think it's important to look at every facet of articles like these, not just reading between the lines, but looking at the images themselves to see what they may be telling us. Underneath this image, the caption reads, "Militaries and defense contractors around the world are developing ways for artificial intelligence to complement technologies used on and over the battlefield." The caption then goes on to say, "Bloomberg's Nate Langson and Jackie Davalos are joined by Anduril Industries co-founder Trey Stevens, DARPA official Dr. Kathleen Fisher, and activist and writer Brett Wilkins to discuss how AI is redefining the battlefield." To finish up this piece, AIP, which is again Palantir's language learning model weapon, we'll also have civilian applications. Another demo video shows how a manufacturing company could use it to prepare for a hurricane strike by analyzing operations at its distribution centers and deciding whether to accelerate, delay, or cancel orders. It will be capable of forecasting the impact to customer orders and forecast revenue in these situations. The company said during Monday's call that a client in the insurance industry was given early access to the platform and described it as, quote, years ahead, unquote, of other solutions it had seen. Within a few days of having access to the tool, Palantir said, the customer was able to build a, quote, collaborative AI agent, unquote, to automate claims processing. So, again, it's going to have, it already has military applications. And we have this part of the narrative that tries to temper that with, it's also going to have civilian applications. It's going to make business more streamlined. It's going to make insurance, which is an extortion racket, more streamlined. It's going to automate all of this and gradually reduce the need for human labor in these. And ideally, according to the people who evangelize and promote this technology, ideally it's going to completely replace human labor. Though, if you ask me if that's possible, I don't think it is, and I don't think it will ever be achieved. And I also think that the capability or capabilities of so-called artificial intelligence technology is way oversold. When we start talking about truly complex systems like human beings, like the human brain, artificial intelligence, as it were, can only ever approximate the complexities of a human being, of the human mind. It can't fully achieve what the human mind is capable of. And in part, that's because we as human beings do not even know what the human mind is fully capable of. And this idea that somehow so-called artificial intelligence is going to be able to learn at such a velocity, at such a rate, that it will eventually know us better than we know ourselves, I think is a fiction. Now, it may be the case, but again, when you think about how so-called artificial intelligence becomes very unwieldy when it's asked to deal with complex systems like human beings, I don't see that ability to know humans better than humans know themselves ever being achieved. Of course, at this time, we have talk about that, fear-mongering about that, coming from many of the very people who've created and propagated this technology, about how we need to take a step back and not let this technology get out of hand. To me, that is a publicity exercise that has to do with not just keeping this technology in our field of vision, on our minds, as something that's out there that we'll inevitably have to reckon with and incorporate into our lives and adapt to, but it's also a publicity exercise, or perhaps a psychological exercise, to inculcate fear and anxiety in us about this technology, about what it is already capable of, and about what it will supposedly be capable of in the future. And that fear and anxiety will drive a lot of people, has already driven a lot of people, to navigate this technology, to try to understand it, because they believe that it's inevitable that they'll have to, and it's best to adopt the Elon Musk mantra that we need to integrate this AI into our lives. In the case of Elon Musk, we need to merge with the AI before the AI overtakes us. I'm not one for fear, so I argue there's nothing to fear here, but there is a lot to be watchful of, to be watchful for. And we should always remember again that this is Trojan horse technology that's meant to be used against us. It's rolled out first to us to create acceptance, to create an air of inevitability. And again, once the proverbial genie is out of the proverbial bottle, there is somewhat of an inevitability that comes with the release of this technology. But we must remember our agency. We don't have to use this technology. We don't have to go to ChatGPT and use it if we don't want to. Now, as it becomes more and more built into the technologies we regularly use, it will be impossible to avoid it completely, I think, but we can still be mindful of how we use it. We can still be thoughtful of how we use it. We can still be careful about how we use it, or we can avoid it altogether if that's a possibility. For some out there, that is a possibility. It's akin to using social media. We can use it in a mindful, useful, productive way insofar as that's possible, or we can go on autopilot when we use it and get lost in it and get lost in the hive mind that it creates and the very bizarre behavior that is provoked by social media, whether we're talking about Facebook, Twitter, Telegram, Substack. When you go into these platforms, when you use these technologies on autopilot, it's very easy to become disembodied, whether that's your intention or not. And that too is part of the weaponization of this digital technology against us, this language learning model technology, this so-called artificial intelligence. It's weaponized against us to make us feel disembodied, to make us feel estranged from ourselves. And when we're estranged from ourselves, all sorts of manipulations can be done to us. And we only need to look at the last 3+ years to see a glaring example of that. Sticking with ChatGPT, which seems to be gaining in popularity and gaining in promotion, gaining in use by the day. Where does the base energy for this technology come from? Well, certainly it comes from electricity, but it also comes from human labor. As I've stated on previous programs, it's vital we remember that the exploitation and extraction of human labor, of human energy, undergirds all of this technology that we're talking about. It's not possible without the human labor, the human energy that in most, if not all cases, it seeks to eventually do away with. On that note, there is an investigative report that Time Magazine, of all outlets, produced back in January, which I missed at the time. But even though that seems even farther away than May 9th, this investigation is still, it's as relevant as ever. And it's entitled Exclusive: OpenAI Used Kenyan Workers on Less Than $2 Per Hour to Make ChatGPT Less Toxic. It's a lengthy investigative piece that, again, you can find at time.com. I searched for it. I knew of it. I didn't know the exact title. I searched for it with ChatGPT and $1.32 an hour, and it came right up. So there's an easy way you might find it. There are probably easier ways. I want to read a bit from this investigation. It is lengthy, but well worth the entire read. But I want to read from what to me is the core part of it, or a big part of the core part of it. But before I do, the image at the top of it, again, I think important to analyze. And it's a graphic that almost looks like a painting, and it has African workers whose backs are either turned to us, although there's one whose face is visible from a side profile, but the face is almost completely devoid of features. And most of these individuals are wearing khaki-colored clothing, although two of them are in green, and they're staring at blank screens, blank computer screens, and the background is a putrid sort of yellow, a mustard yellow. I like mustard, but I'm not sure I would eat mustard if it had this coloration to it. And underneath this graphic, the caption reads, "This image was generated by OpenAI's image generation software, DALL-E 2. That's D-A-L-L hyphen capital E 2. And the D in D-A-L-L is capitalized, the A-L-L lowercase, DALL-E 2. Obviously a play on Salvador Dali. The prompt was, quote, "A seemingly endless view of African workers at desks in front of computer screens in a printmaking style," unquote. Time does not typically use AI-generated art to illustrate its stories, but chose to in this instance in order to draw attention to the power of OpenAI's technology and shed light on the labor that makes it possible. Image generated by DALL-E 2 / OpenAI. I'll leave it at that with regard to the caption. Getting into the investigation, here is a core excerpt from it. "The success story, that of ChatGPT, is not one of Silicon Valley genius alone. In its quest to make ChatGPT less toxic, OpenAI, which again is the parent company or the creator of ChatGPT, used outsourced Kenyan laborers earning less than $2 per hour, a Time investigation has found. The work was vital for OpenAI. ChatGPT's predecessor, GPT-3, had already shown an impressive ability to string sentences together, but it was a difficult sell as the app was also prone to blurting out violent, sexist, and racist remarks. This is because the AI had been trained on hundreds of billions of words scraped from the internet, a vast repository of human language. That huge training data set was the reason for GPT-3's impressive linguistic capabilities, but was also perhaps its biggest curse. Since parts of the internet are replete with toxicity and bias, there was no easy way of purging those sections of the training data. Even a team of hundreds of humans would have taken decades to trawl through the enormous data set manually. It was only by building an additional AI-powered safety mechanism that OpenAI would be able to rein in the harm, producing a chatbot suitable for everyday use." And that's what they want from us. They want us to be using this every day to outsource our thinking, to outsource our creativity to this OpenAI this ChatGPT technology. To build that safety system, OpenAI took a leaf out of the playbook of social media companies like Facebook, who had already shown it was possible to build AIs that could detect toxic language like hate speech to help remove it from their platforms. Again, I'll point out the progression here from the weaponization of social media platforms to the weaponization of technology like ChatGPT against us. And when you think about how this is being built by near slave labor, in part being built by near slave labor, that's weaponization right there. That's the weaponization of the creation of this technology against human beings. The premise was simple: feed an AI with labeled examples of violence, hate speech, and sexual abuse, and that tool could learn to detect those forms of toxicity in the wild. That detector would be built into ChatGPT to check whether it was echoing the toxicity of its training data and filter it out before it ever reached the user. It could also help scrub toxic content from the training data sets of future AI models. Now, there's a lot to be said here about so-called toxic content and so-called hate speech and what should or should not be available to us in terms of information. As I said in a conversation to a friend and colleague this past weekend, although I'm not a fan of this term, I consider myself a free speech absolutist, and I don't think that any censorship is justified. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that images or videos of child abuse should be out there, or that anybody should be watching those, that that is acceptable in any way. Absolutely not. That is, to me, the epitome of evil. But do we want entities and technologies like ChatGPT, like Palantir, determining what information is toxic and therefore what information we can and cannot engage with? My answer to that is no. Now, how do you get around, for example, images, videos of child abuse, of violence, of all the horrible things you can think of? I don't have an answer to that, except to say for myself that I don't go looking for any of that. The only time I negotiate with any of that is in reading investigations like this one from Time. I know that content is out there and can be found, which is horrendous. And I don't know what to do about that. I don't know how you destroy that evil while also preserving completely free access to information. I don't have the answer to that, but I think it's something we must figure out. But we can do it, I think, without Palantir, without OpenAI deciding for us how to do it. A larger conversation to have, but one we must have. Continuing with this Time piece, to get those labels, and again, these are labels of so-called toxic content, some of which is I don't know if I would use the word toxic. I would use a different descriptor, certainly not a kind descriptor. To get those labels, OpenAI sent tens of thousands of snippets of text to an outsourcing firm in Kenya beginning in November 2021. Much of that text appeared to have been pulled from the darkest recesses of the internet. Some of it described situations in graphic detail, like child sexual abuse, bestiality, murder, suicide, torture, self-harm, and incest. Again, all horrific things, none of which I promote, none of which I support people engaging with at all. I suppose outside of a research capacity, a capacity that entails engaging with this for the betterment of humanity, to expose and put an end to this evil. As far as engaging with any of this for entertainment, for profit, it is evil, and I'm very deliberate about using that term. And again, we need to figure out how to destroy such evil, if such is even possible, while preserving complete freedom of information. Perhaps that's not possible. Perhaps I'm being too idealistic, but again, a larger conversation we must have. And it is being had. I realize that. And we need to continue having that conversation. And I'm all open to any thoughts you might have. Feel free to email me if you have thoughts. This is something I think about a lot and will be thinking about probably for the rest of my life, as this technology, these weapons are brought into being and inserted into our everyday lives. Moving on, OpenAI's outsourcing partner in Kenya was Sama, S-A-M-A, a San Francisco-based firm that employs workers in Kenya, Uganda, and India to label data for Silicon Valley clients like Google, Meta, and Microsoft. Sama markets itself as an, quote, ethical AI, unquote, company, and claims to have helped lift more than 50,000 people out of poverty. Below that paragraph, there is a picture of Sama's office in Nairobi, Kenya. The picture was taken in February of 2022. A very, well, Silicon Valley looking office. If you've been to Silicon Valley, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you've seen the Facebook, now Meta, sprawling headquarters, campus, hellscape, you'll know what I'm talking about. The architecture is very similar. The data labelers employed by Sama on behalf of OpenAI were paid a take-home wage of between around $1.32 and $2 per hour, depending on seniority and performance. For this story, Time interviewed hundreds of pages of internal Sama and OpenAI documents, including workers' pay slips, and interviewed four Sama employees who worked on the project. All the employees spoke on condition of anonymity out of concern for their livelihoods. Livelihoods funded by near slave wages. It's disgusting. The story of the workers who made ChatGPT possible offers a glimpse into the conditions of this little-known part of the AI industry, which nevertheless plays an essential role in the effort to make AI systems safe for public consumption. Public consumption. quote, despite the foundational role played by these data enrichment professionals, I'm not sure they consider themselves that at $1.32 to $2 an hour, but nice try at a nice euphemism. Despite the foundational role played by these data enrichment professionals, a growing body of research reveals the precarious working conditions these workers face, unquote, says the Partnership on AI, a coalition of AI organizations to which OpenAI belongs. Quote, this may be the result of efforts to hide AI's dependence on this large labor force when celebrating the efficiency gains of technology. Out of sight is also out of mind, unquote. OpenAI does not disclose the names of the outsourcers it partners with, and it is not clear whether OpenAI worked with other data labeling firms in addition to Sama on this project. There's much more to this investigation, but this is a core part of it, and the core part of it being that this technology that's sold to us as so-called artificial intelligence, as what will be the future, relies on, it needs human labor, human energy, and human capital, and probably always will, because I don't think that so-called convergence, that so-called singularity is going to be reached. And what comes along with the need for such human capital? Impact investing, as I've talked about a number of times before. And impact investing is part of a new economic model for the transformation of the international monetary and financial system, which relies now and will rely even more on the future, I wager, on blockchain and tokenization and financialization of human capital and human potential through tokenization. And again, what can be done with this is to predict how, for example, these laborers in Kenya or in Uganda or in India will perform, how well they will perform their tasks in labeling so-called toxic information. And that can be bundled into, and I'm not exaggerating here, a collateralized debt obligation. So bets can be placed on the performance and future output of these laborers. And that will determine too how much they earn. And it would be interesting to know how these workers are paid, if they're paid in cash, if they're paid in currency we're familiar with, or if they're paid in tokens. And that's something I intend to look into more. But this is where the transformation of the International Monetary and Financial System, the IMFS, is going. And this is also what we need to take away from this investigation, and also what we need to take away from what Palantir is doing with weaponizing AI. A lot of that is going to be predicated upon, based upon analytics, data analytics, predictive analytics. And that, the source of that is data mining, mining our data to determine our behaviors, to modify our behaviors to where the proverbial they want to steer our behaviors, and then to commodify our behaviors, to financialize what currently doesn't have an asset value to it, or at least a tangible asset value to it. And again, much of this, if not all of it, is going to come through blockchain and tokenization. And that's why it's important to be very wary of so-called alternative currencies like Bitcoin, like Ethereum, not to mention central bank digital currency, because the blockchain, while it's promoted as a source of, as a tool of anonymity, as a tool of currency liberation, of decentralized finance, it's a tether in the end. Once we're on it, we're tethered to it, and our behavior, our labor, our energy is tokenized, whether that's where we intend for it to go or not. That's the model. And I think that certain versions of cryptocurrency, of decentralized finance, are being purposely destroyed to reduce the field and further centralize those that are the most effective. So with the Signature Bank SVB collapse, we saw the takedown of cryptocurrency exchanges. With FTX, we saw the takedown of a massive cryptocurrency exchange. But Bitcoin remains, Ethereum remains, and these are useful to the same people who want to impose CBDCs on us. And they're useful because they need them for the transformation they are seeking to bring about, the transformation of the IMFS, a tokenized transformation, the tokenized commons. And once more, I want to give credit to Allison McDowell and her colleague, Jason Bosch, who've done a lot of work on this for a long time, and to my mind are way ahead of the game on where the transformation of the international monetary and financial system is going, where the exploitation of human capital and human energy is going, and find and engage with their content. I highly recommend you do on YouTube, of all places. But yes, they are on YouTube, and I hope they are on there for good. I hope nothing happens to all the amazing work they've put out. I highly recommend finding that and engaging with that to get more clarity on what I'm talking about here, because I'm still learning about this, but it makes so much sense to me that this is where we are headed. And when we look into what the major entities are pushing, it's impact investing. It's impact investing that is tied to, inherently, that's what impact investing is, tied to the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And the Sustainable Development Goals are, as Ian Davis has pointed out, about, again, the transformation of the international monetary and financial system. They're sold to us as for the betterment of humanity, for saving the planet, for equal rights for all. That's just the patina. That's the sales pitch, which is not to say, again, that there aren't huge problems with the environment that we need to attend to, problems that are getting worse by the day. But impact investing, sustainable development goals, ESG, they will not and have never intended to address those problems. And when you look at what the entities pushing impact investing, pushing SDGs, pushing ESG are talking about, well, we can look, for example, at the website of the International Institute for Sustainable Development, IISD.org, and a report they put out in April of 2019, Impact Tokens, a blockchain-based solution for impact investing. And the summary of this reads, impact tokens and blockchain technology offer promising solutions to mobilizing investments toward the sustainable development goals by addressing the underlying challenges of the impact investing industry. Further to this, the summary talks about how blockchain technology offers new investment and economic opportunities by enabling the transfer of value in a frictionless manner, providing trust as an immutable ledger, meaning you're tethered to it, and converting assets into digital tokens that can be programmed through smart contracts. Smart contracts are another huge part of the transformation we're talking about here. Blockchain offers solutions that are particularly promising to address the underlying challenges of the impact investing industry. Impact tokens describe a group of tokens with the specific goal of unlocking investments for projects with positive social and environmental impacts. A review of over 200 projects that are either active or in development, again, this was in 2019, 4 years ago. So what the number of projects is now, I don't know, but I will guarantee you that it's more than 200. The review gleaned four key benefits of impact tokens: increasing trust between parties, sounds nice; promoting financial and social inclusion, sounds nice. Here comes the core of it: improving data collection and accelerating monitoring, reporting, and verification processes. And then the fourth, incentivizing behaviors that promote sustainability. So here we have the data mining, and here we have the behavior modification and commodification. And this is blockchain. This is tokenization, impact tokens, so-called binomics. And this is a model that's being set up to add to the massive amount of capital, both private and public, that's already being mobilized to bring about the transformation of the international monetary and financial system. And much of this, I understand, seems abstract or seems technical, and it is for me too. Again, I'm still learning about this, but I want to bring it to your attention because I think I'm convinced that this is where we're headed. And we can look to Ukraine as a case study in this, I'm very sad to say. And a piece that was published in IPE.com. IPE is Investment and Pensions Europe, a finance media outlet. And this piece was published in April of this year, Ukraine, the mother of all impact investments. And it goes into detail about how impact investing has already been leveraged, has already been adopted as the way to so-called rebuild Ukraine and to rebuild a green Ukraine. And in fact, discussions to do this were already underway in a mere matter of months after the latest iteration of the war in Ukraine began. Lots of food for thought there. Thank you for sticking with me. I will be getting into more of this in the future and clarifying more of this in the future, because again, I'm convinced that this is the way we're going and we need to arm ourselves with knowledge to understand and resist this. Stay tuned for Joe Hopped up next here on TNT Radio, and I'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Take care.